If you will, take out your Bibles and turn to John chapter 21. John chapter 21 is where we'll be starting this morning. You know, in life it's hard not to compare. You know, it's just, you just notice things. And Bill's already laughing because he had the nice slide up there, and I don't have a slide, so the comparisons will already start. But it's hard not to do that, right? It's just, you see some things and you think, wow, that's nice. Or you see some things and you think, wow, that's not nice. And then you do the same thing to yourself sometimes. You look at yourself and you think, man, I got this going on. I'm really good at this. And then if you have some humility in yourself, you're going to see yourself a lot of times and you're like, whew, I'm really bad at that. But as that is part of what we do a lot of times, we have to be very careful with that. Because if we allow that just to always go on in our mind, it can cause some problems between us and other people. It can cause us not to do things that we should do or do things that we shouldn't do. In John chapter 21, verse 20, it says, Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. The one also had leaned back on his bosom at the supper and said, Lord, who is this? Who is the one who betrays you? So Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, Lord, and what about this man? And Jesus said to him, what if I want him to remain until I come? What is that to you? You follow me. Therefore, this saying went out among the brethren that the disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but only, if I want him to remain until I come, what is it to you? So in this little story here, it comes after Jesus had the conversation with Peter about feeding his sheep. And he illustrated that point three times to him, just as Peter denied Christ three times. Three times, as he was walking with Peter, he tells him to feed my sheep. And so Peter had a very specific job given to him by the Lord. The Lord wanted him to accomplish something and to do something. But immediately after that, he sees apparently John. And he sees John and he says, well, look, this one must be more special than me. What about this one who God must... Does God love this one more than me? Does Christ love this one more than me? Jesus, what about this one? And Jesus' reply was, don't you worry about him. You do what you need to do. If I want him to live until I come again, thousands of years, what does that matter to you? How is that important to you? How does that affect what you should be doing? And that was kind of a rhetorical question, wasn't it? The point was, it doesn't matter. You do what you're supposed to be doing. And again, in life, that's hard for us a lot of times. As we see people do things, we admire what they do, we want to be like that. And that's okay, as long as that's something the Lord has given us to do. If the Lord has given you another job to do, you need to be focused on doing that job. And doing that heartily as well as you can to the Lord. And so we're going to be looking primarily this morning in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And we'll start in verse 15 in just a second. And the example here that Paul is giving us, and it's kind of a funny example when you stop and you think about it and look at some of these illustrations that he's giving us. But that's the way it is in life. A lot of times we can see the absurdity of what we think and how we act by some humor. When I first started at Indiana University and I was on the campus there, one of the first things I did is I went to what was called the Commons. And I went to get on the elevator. Now, back then, I was still this tall, of course, so I was about 6'1", but I only weighed about 155 to 160 pounds, so I was rather slender at that time. I know it's hard to believe, but I was rather slender at one time. And I got on the elevator, and when I got on the elevator, there was three or four offensive linemen on the elevator. Now, I was shorter than every one of them. Every one of them was at least 6'3", to 6'6", and about 300 pounds. And the first thing that went through my mind was, what am I doing getting on this elevator? They were different than I was. But you know what? The joke is on them. Because they can never be a jockey. I don't care how hard they try, they will never compete in the Kentucky Derby. Never will happen. Why? They don't have the physique for it. They got a physique, but they don't have a physique for that. And no matter how much that jockey may try, guess what will never happen for him? He will never be an offensive lineman at the University of Indiana. It will not happen. We understand the absurdity of it, don't we? God gives us certain things. And we can see that in our body. We have certain things that God gives us. But that goes to everything in life and everything about us. It's the same about our personalities. It's the same about our intellect. But it's the same about our intellect in different areas. You know, before I got married, my college career was not as stellar as I would like it to be. I mean, I could survive. But as soon as I got married, my papers got a lot better. I mean, they made a lot more sense when I wrote a paper. It wasn't because I became smarter. It's because Dion did all the grammar for me. And she helped me structure them. And she helped me put the verbs and the adverbs and all the other stuff where it belongs. I was good at taking a thought and thinking that I was putting it on paper correctly. She was good at taking that thought and making it make sense to somebody else. I could study forever, and that's never going to be one of my skills. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to spell that great. I'm going to be the person on there that gets the grammar police all worked up on Facebook. You know, the ones that, you know, that make comments about people saying things wrong. Well, I'm going to be the one that gives them a job. But that's okay. I learned in life that that's okay that I'm not good in that area, because I have some areas that I'm very good in. And if I focus on doing what I can in those areas, I can be successful. And we need to do the same thing as the church. And so he starts there in chapter 12, verse 15. He says, if the foot says, because I'm not the hand, I'm not part of the body, is it not for this reason any less part of the body? And if the ear says, because I'm not an eye, I'm not part of the body, is it not for this reason any less part of the body? And we can understand the humor or the rhetoricalness of it. If the foot, of course, the foot can't talk because it's not the mouth, but if the foot could say, I'm not the hand, and because I'm not the hand, what I want to be the hand. And because I wasn't granted to be the hand, I'm not important, and so therefore I'm not going to do anything. I'm not a part of the body. Is it really not part of the body? Has it removed itself from the body? Has it chopped itself off and it's stomping off somewhere as it's not part of the body? Of course not. It's silliness, isn't it? It can have that choice. It can have that mindset all at once, but it's still there. But guess what happens if it's not fulfilling its duty in the body? Does the body suffer? Absolutely. If the foot stops working, does it affect everybody else? Yes. It's still part of things. It's still there. But now, instead of being an aid, what does it become? It becomes a hindrance. And so as we look at ourselves and as we think about ourselves, if we look at other people and we get so concentrated on what they have that we're not using what we've got, we're no longer an aid. We're no longer a help. We're a hindrance to things. And again, in our society, we see this all. There's lots of movies about people switching places. There's a lot of movies about, you know, some magical thing happening, and this one person's complaining about their life and this other person complaining about their lives, and their lives get swapped. And then they realize, well, their life really wasn't any better than my life. My life was really pretty good. But we all do that, and we want to do that. Why do we do that? We do it a lot of times because of envy or jealousy. We do it because we want to be the ones that are glorified or praised. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, we see the example there of Saul in verse 7 through 9. And 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 7 through 9. And I'll just mention the example there if you want to read it while we're talking about it.
But Saul is coming back from war. And as he comes back from war, the women have gathered to praise Saul and sing tribute to Saul. But during this song of tribute and praise, they say, Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. What was Saul's attitude towards that? Did Saul take that as like, well, at least they're acknowledging I've killed my thousands. I've done something for the Lord. Look at what I've done in the service of God. They see that I've done something. Yes, David did greater, and I applaud David. David is such a great young man in service of God. I applaud what he has done. Was that Saul's attitude? No, what was Saul's attitude? Saul became infuriated. Saul's attitude towards David, because of what other people were saying, changed from that moment on. Because other people praised somebody a little bit more than what he got praised, his attitude towards David changed. Have you ever been that person? You've done something and somebody else done something and somebody comes up and says, you did a good job. And then right after that, they go to the next person. Oh, I love what you did. You did such a great job. And what goes through your mind? The first thing might be, well, that wasn't very much for me. Instead of saying, you know, they took time to acknowledge I did something. We want to be the one that gets the extra acknowledgement. We want to be the one who gets the extra praise. We want to be the one everybody sees all the time. We don't want to be the ones down here behind the podium. Nobody sees. We want to be out there. We want to be the hands. Right? That's what Paul is warning them about. Don't be thinking it from that perspective. Because sometimes people need to see someone who's maybe a little less talented doing everything with that little less talent as they can. Because guess what? There's other people with less talent too. And I talk a lot about, you know, where I grew up, of course, you know, because that's where I grew up and that's what I think about. And I think about the preacher where I grew up. He used to write on the whiteboard. We had whiteboards before the, you know, the overheads. For those who were way back, okay? We had whiteboards. And he would, you go back further than that, you had the green boards, right? And you had chalk. But anyway, he would write on the boards. And he would misspell words all the time. He would prepare himself. He would look up the words. He would be ready to write the words. And he'd get up there and start writing. And he would misspell it. Almost every time he got up there to spell stuff, we'd find something misspelled. But you know what it did? Every time he started to write something, everybody in the place focused. Everybody knew he was making a point. And they were waiting for what that point was going to be. It seemed like a hindrance. It seemed like a weakness. But it was really a blessing. And then for somebody like me who struggles with that, to see somebody who says, you know what, this is not going to stop me. I'm going to still write on the board. I might get it wrong, but I'm going to write on the board. Somebody out there that's, you know, like me, if he can do it, I can do it. He's not going to write any great novels. It's not going to happen. But it was a blessing. And he took that blessing and he used that blessing. And other people saw that blessing. And so instead of saying I'm just a foot, be the best foot you can possibly be. Do what you can do. Now it goes on and we look at, and you know, to me that's kind of, we have those Moses moments. We need to be wary of those Moses moments. And what I saw about Moses moment is when God came to him and said, go speak to my people. Moses was, no, I can't speak. And God basically had to threaten him, you're going to go. Moses, God knows how you speak. He created you. He said, I created you. I gave you your tongue. I know how you speak. I know who you are.
and here's Aaron, he'll help you. But Moses is making these, we do that sometimes. I'm limited, so let me make an excuse of why I can't do what I can do. And God may have great plans for us in what we have, in the abilities that we have. Now going on, I'm going to skip to verse 20, a little bit out of order here, but it says, but now there are members, but one body, many members, but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Or again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it is much more truer that the members of the body which seem weaker are necessary than those members of the body which we deem less honorable. On these bestow more abundant honor. And our less presentable members become much more presentable. Whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. You know, one thing in the church that we need to always be mindful of is over celebrating someone who has a talent in an area. They haven't of themselves accomplished anything great. They're just using a talent which God gave them. And so we need to celebrate that with God. And he's telling us to focus on maybe the ones who are less celebrated. You know, we talked about a little bit in the church or in the class today about the women not being able to preach. But I know in most congregations that I have been in that women have brought more people to the Lord than the preacher had. Why? If you read the New Testament, women are intricately involved in the church. The widows are intricately involved. The older women are teaching the younger women. They're giving themselves to hospitality. You can read about all the women who had churches in their houses and did those types of work. They're very involved in the work. They may not preach, but they're very involved in the work and have an important role. And so if you look at it and say, well, you know, that I can't do this one thing, then I'm not going to do anything. Again, that's the wrong perspective. But just because you're sometimes the preacher gets the mindset, well, I'm the preacher. And so since I'm the preacher, you need to do what I tell you to do. You need to do what I'm instructing, because it's hard sometimes, because you're the one up there getting all the pats on the back. Everybody's waiting to shake your hand on the way out the door. That's who they're waiting to shake the hand of. Now, I was preaching in a congregation one time that had two different doors, and I can always tell who liked my lesson and who didn't like my lesson. Because if they like my lesson, they're coming over here to this door. If they didn't like the lesson, they go talk to my wife real quick and then go to the other door. That was the method. But, you know, that's not the way it is. You know, we mostly want to shake the preacher's hands, right? Or somebody gives a lesson, we're gonna find that person afterwards and we're gonna say, hey, great job. But there's other people here that need a shaking of a hand. They need some encouragement. You know, they need, I mean, you still pat the preacher on the back, that's fine. But make sure that that's not where your sole focus is. Go find the people that seem to be get less attention. Because they need the attention too. And I've found in life the people who say, I want no attention. You don't have to give me any attention. You know what those people want? They want attention. They still want pats on the back. Everybody wants it. They may walk off and be embarrassed for a second, but I guarantee you when they're at home by themselves, they're going to appreciate that pat on the back. And so don't let people say, well, you know, I really don't need the attention, cause you not to give them some attention. They still need it. You know, you might want to watch how you do it, but they still need it. And us as parents, we need to be very careful with our kids. This is an area where I see we really struggle with. Because we want to celebrate everything about our kids. We love our kids. They're an extension of us. And we want to celebrate everything about them. I talk about Noah all the time. But I need to be careful that I teach her to celebrate what other people accomplish. And it's not about her all the time. So when I talk to her about things that are going on, I'll say, did you see what so-and-so did? They did such a great job. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to get her to look and see, it's not all about me. Just because I'm the eye, I'm not more important than the ear.
or just because I'm the head on this one thing doesn't mean I'm not any more that I'm more important than the feet. Where's the head going to get to without the feet? You're not going anywhere, head. Right? It's humorous, but that's what he's saying. You're not going to do anything. And if you're an eye, yes, you may see things, but you might not hear about what's sneaking up behind you. You're susceptible. And so he's using these examples here to try to teach us that we need to celebrate things in other individuals other than ourselves. And we like to glory in ourselves. And we like to glory in things that aren't important. In James chapter 1, he tells them there, in James chapter 1, verse 1, my brethren, do not hold the faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. For if a man comes to your assembly, I think it's chapter 2, sorry, with a gold ring and dressed with fine clothing, and there also comes in a poor man with dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one wearing the fine clothes and say, sit here in this good place. And you say to the poor man, you stand over there and sit down at my footstool. Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? And so he's warning us there to how we look at things. Now, I say, and a lot of times today, we have to watch it both ways. I've met people who see somebody who has some wealth or some education or something, and they immediately start treating them bad. And they immediately try to put them on the spot about that. Now, we can't be doing that. But we can't be doing the other either. That we see somebody who is not as educated or not as wealthy or not as good to do as somebody else, and we put them in the back. We need to put everybody where they in the same place. And that's before us. That's where they need to be. And so he's warning them that you have become judges with evil thoughts. But we see this in our life today. We understand it in our life today. When you think about your children, you know, we all want our children to be successful in certain things, but we have to be careful. What's most important in our society? A lot of times when I talk to people at work, I say to them, you know, doctors are important. And if doctors went away, I'd miss them at some point. But I don't go to the doctor every week. I tell you who I'd miss right quick if they were gone. The sanitation workers. How fast would the trash pile up if there wasn't people to come pick up the trash? Go to a third world country where they don't have it. And see the trash piles and the different stuff that they have. We don't glorify the sanitation worker. We glorify the doctor. But that sanitation worker is just as key to our society and to our standard of living as anyone else is. We need to give them the pats on the back. We think sometimes, again, because we've accomplished a little something, that we've become something. But we haven't. We only become something through the Lord. And so if we do this, we need to understand that there's a couple of key verses in this as well. If you go to verse 18, he says, but now God has placed the members, each one of them in the body, just as he desired. The moment you either start looking at yourself and putting yourself down so far that you say, I can't do anything, or the moment you rise yourself up so far that you say you don't need anybody else, you need to understand what you're really doing is you're rebelling against God. Because God has created the body, and he put each member and created each member for a function within the body. And so if you say, God, I know you created me for this, but I'm not going to do it, you're rebelling against God. Or if you're the other side, you say, God, you've made me so great, I don't need so-and-so. Then you're rebelling against God, because God says you do. And so we need to understand that God has designed this thing. God has designed me. He's given me weaknesses, and he's given me strengths. I want to minimize my weaknesses, but I need to make sure I'm using my strengths to every bit I can for the Lord.
And so whatever that may be, you need to do it because God has given you that job. In verse 19, if we were all one member, where would the body be? But now we are not many members, but one body. But God has composed the body, giving more abundant honor to the members which lack, so that there be no division in the body, but the members that are the same care for one another. What's the point of the body? He says there'd be no division. He doesn't want division. He wants you to do your job and focus on doing your job and praise the other people for doing their job so that you're working together, so that there's no division in what we're trying to do. And we can all understand this in life. You know, when I was working at Geico and in some management jobs, there was this class I went to, and it taught us about the different, you know, everybody's different. They have to bring different things to the table. They use this analogy of NASA going to space and the different components of people. And there was a problem arising. Is you had the scientists and you had the engineers. Okay? The scientists were wanting to figure out how to do certain things, and the engineers were saying, no, you got to do it this way. Right? This is the way we're going to do it. And the scientists said, no, let's try something new. Let's try to think outside the box here. Let's do it this way. And then, no. Right? There's a natural conflict happening there. So guess what they had to bring in? Some mediators. Some people from maybe the human resource side who could talk to both of them and kind of help bridge some of the anxiety or animosity. But then you had this fourth group. You know who that was? It was the astronaut. They sent the astronaut out around the U.S., you know, touring the U.S., talking to high schools and stuff like that. They didn't care about the science behind it. What do they want to do? They just wanted to get to space. But everybody had a job. Everybody had a function for that to work, for that accomplishment to be accomplished. What is our job? Our job is to spread the gospel. That's our job. To praise God and spread the gospel. You know, we're told to go into all the world. Now, does that mean each and every one of us go out into all the world? Of course not. If that's what it literally means, then we all better start heading over to different places in the world. But our job is to make sure the gospel goes out into all the world. Now, we're to give an answer for what we believe at all times. The Lord gives us that obligation. But we do that here at this congregation, if you think about it. By the men preaching, what are we doing? We take the money and we do what with it? We send it to men other places. And they do what? They preach the gospel. Paul told the people that supported him, when you support me, you share in my labor. They were going to all the world through Paul. He didn't tell them, hey, you guys got to get on the ship and come over here with me. No. But we all have a function. We all have a duty. And whatever that is, we need to be doing it so the gospel can come out. The last passage and the last thing I want to look at with you is, how do you get into this body? We see that God's created this body. That God has designed it. That it's of God, and he wants everybody to have a job. And he wants everybody to be important in what they're doing, and they are important in what they're doing. But how do we get into the body? If you will, go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 12 to 13. It says, for as the body, as is one members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body also in Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greek, whether slaves or free, we have all been made to drink unto that one Spirit. The invitation is very simple. If you are not a part of the body, if you haven't obeyed the cause of Christ, the gospel of Christ, we want you to be a part of the body. God has a job for you. God has a purpose for you. He wants you to be a part of it. And the way that you get to be a part of it, just like he says everybody else does. I don't care whether you're Greek or whether you're Jew, whether you're slave, whether you're free, whether you're male, whether you're female, whether you have a 90 IQ or you have 150 IQ, whether you're 6'1" or you're 5'1". I don't care who you are. You all get in the body the same way. And that's through baptism into Jesus Christ. If you haven't done that, this is the opportunity as we stand and sing.